You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.
Life is life, a mountain railroad, with an engine that's brave. We must make the run successful from the cradle to the grave. What's the curse? The fields and tunnels never falter, never fail. Keep your hand upon the throttle and your ride upon the rail. Blessed Savior, thou will guide us till we reach that blissful shore.
Well, this is Ralph Crumbut Winterroad with the Ralph Winterroad Show, coming to you live out of Alaska in our coup d'etat government that's been overthrown for a long, long, long time. And Ed, you still there?
I'm here.
Yeah, you were saying 38. Well, I would probably take issue with that, and I'll tell you why. Because during the Civil War, there were 24 states that existed. And those were all brought in, to my knowledge, by Congress. And West Virginia came in during the Civil War. After the Civil War, all of the southern states, at gunpoint, all of the people, they reconstructed their constitutions. They didn't do all the north, but they did all of the south. Now, what also...
Well, the north followed suit. Iowa followed suit, though. They did it on their own.
Well, that there may be, I don't know, without resource, but I can tell you this.
Yeah.
And see, Congress is supposed to bring in all of the several states. And what changed was they started to bring them in by presidential proclamation. Okay? Now, I don't know when. I'd have to go back and look. It's been a while.
Well, if you look at the statutes at large, they did all to bring them in. However, because the Congress was sitting unlawfully according to each state constitution, and I'm talking about the statehood constitution now, forget about all those other reconstruction constitutions, because all those reconstruction constitutions are meaningless. The only one that means anything is the original statehood constitution, and here's why. It's because it was the constitution that created your state. And so, therefore, if you were to change that constitution in any significant way, right, then you would actually throw out your statehood. And so you can't do that.
Well, it's one level below that, because Congress has no authority to mandate you shall do this, because there's all kinds of verbiage that changed. And also, yes, what they were doing then is the citizens of the United States, they were using them, and they have no right of suffrage. They have no right of the elective franchise. And they, as a citizen of the United States, is under the plenary power of Congress.
Of Congress. That's right. That's right. And so what I'm saying to you is, whenever a Congress is not sitting according to the statehood constitutions of every state that are lawful, that is, okay, if they're not sitting lawfully, then Congress cannot do business at all, period. That, as under our organic laws, the only thing they can do is create fiat, which is like, for example, if you look up West Publishing, West Encyclopedia of Law, if you look it up, and you look up the word resolution, everything they do is under a resolution, and a resolution is nothing but an opinion, if you read that. I mean, when you read that, it'll blow your mind. I mean, in the next week.
Okay, well, you can see what I can tell you. This has been they couldn't take all of the states. They couldn't change the courts. They had a lot of issues that they had to deal with, because they created a citizen of the United States in 1866, have the same rights as white citizens.
Right.
Then they put that into the Southern state constitutions, and maybe Iowa did it all on their own, because who knows why they did it. I don't know. I don't have an answer
to
that.
I don't know either, because they did it without having the bayonet stuck up their nose, you know.
Happened, because in 1875, the Judiciary Act of 1789 that established all of the constitutional courts, they went in and they modified it. And what they have to do in 1875, because they were bringing in a citizen of the United States that technically has no standing in an Article III court. So they created something called a federal question, which I tracked down all the way down to 28 U.S.C. 1331. This is what everybody pleads when they go to the United States District Court.
What's in that bathroom?
It's 1331. Okay, so they did that in then, because this is a
graphic.
I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
So then, in the 1890s, they created the Circuit Courts of Appeals, which are non-constitutional courts. And then in 1911, it's right in the code, the judicial power, they got around and they did away with the court,
sure,
circuit courts.
Pardon? Go ahead.
Then in 1911, they got rid of the courts of the United States. I'm hearing a lot of noise or something in the background here. Anyway. And then what they did is, because the appellate court was not a constitutional court, this is right in the 1911 code of the courts. They said, we're taking the judicial power of an appellate court, the circuit courts of the United States, and giving it to a lower court, being the district court of the United States. That was the only constitutional court left, was the District Court of the United States and the Supreme Court of the United States. Okay?
Right.
So now they've got everybody believing they are citizens of the United States, which that's still in the Constitution, people of the several states, the House of Representatives. So in 1913, they passed the 17th Amendment. And what they do, the legislatures of the several states elected senators of the United States. And when they did the 17th, they left out the word several and just made it a state.
Right.
Okay, right. So when they did that, and I got everything.
What you're actually alluding to is everything after the Civil War. This is what the Civil War was all about, Ralph. This is what it was all about, was to abandon totally what the framers did to set up a lawful system in this country. This is what it was all about. This is what the attorneys, or the lawyers actually at that time, did, was they set up a situation so that it would be possible for Congress or legislatures or anything to operate under the organic rules or the organic laws of this nation, so that they could create in 1871, remember, so they could create this corporation, which would be have nothing to do whatsoever with anything that happened that the framers did to create this country or the laws, and they would no longer be able to function under the law of this nation, the true law of this nation. And that's good news. There's no bad news to this. That's the good news, because what that means is, that means that when they abandoned the original laws, and I went back and checked laws of the United States under the statutes at large, I checked them all, and or a lot of them, and I found that those laws still exist and are still controlling this country. And the organic laws supersede anything that they did, because what they did was something that never was intended in this nation at all. And also, the framers, when they created this nation, they created it in perpetuity, which means that the law, everything they did was set in perpetuity so that no one could come in and ever conquer the nation. See?
Okay, so, I'm gonna stop
all
you
we
right
have
there.
To do is go back. All we have to do is go back to the original organic laws, and invoke the original, and they don't have any way to function there. Neither can they challenge there.
Okay, I'm gonna stop you. I just on a couple of statements. First of all, the corporation that was set up in 1871 was not the United States strictly a corporation. The corporation under the Fair Debt Collection Act is a different thing. What they did
right.
do, they made the municipality, the District of Columbia, a corporate entity within
right.
the District of Columbia. But there's something else more important that they did separately. What mm-hmm. they did is, there is a, I think they call it the Dictionary Act in 1871. Are you familiar with that?
No, huh?
Okay, what they did, this was the undoing, because what they did is they went in and defined counties and stuff, and then what they also said, all of the laws of the United States always have and be it enacted, and then on the next section, and be it further enacted. Because any time mm-hmm. you do a different section, that is unique. So you have to say, and be it further enacted. In the Dictionary Act, they took out and be it further enacted. So in reality, since 1871, technically, there have been no, quote, laws of the United States, because when they go to the next section, it does not say, and be it further enacted. Now you take that
right.
farther. Okay, let's just take this a little farther. So you go down to the statutes at large, of which I have all of them, and you go down mm-hmm. and they used to have at the beginning statutes at large, laws of the United States at the beginning of the statutes at large books. So in the early mm-hmm. 1900s, and I don't know, I've got to get the exact years, but I'm going to cover it, somewhere between 1900 and 1936. They started mm-hmm. off with laws of the United States or statutes of the United States. Then
yes.
what they did is they also said that we are making statutes of the United States, or laws of the United States, and laws of the United States of America at the beginning of the Statutes at Large book. They were doing parallel governments, okay? Then what they did, somewhere around in the 20s, they dropped laws of the United States, and they went to strictly laws of the United States of America, which does have nothing to do with the internal part of the several states. So then what they did, next thing they did, between somewhere between 1930, they started making laws of the United States, and they said public laws. Okay, then in 1936, they dropped all laws of the United States of America, and they are nothing but public laws. And if you go look up what public laws are, they are not laws of the United States or nothing. It's all nonsense. It's good to the whole world public. It's all nonsense. That's been happening since 1938.
You say whenever they pass one of these resolutions, and if you notice, everything they do is a resolution. Okay,
I disagree with you there. Where's your evidence that everything is a resolution?
Oh my God! Everything they do is a resolution. Everything they do is a resolution.
Evidence. Where's your evidence?
Well, go look at the laws. You'll see every law is a resolution.
No, they don't say that.
And so it's either a House resolution or a House joint resolution. You know, it's always a resolution. And a resolution is not the front of the opinion of the lawmaker.
Hold it right there. Until we got evidence, right. That's not so. I'm going to disagree with you vehemently there. Okay, not so.
Well, I can send you the most pertinent laws, which they did under resolutions.
But they get around and introduce bills, not as just a resolution. They introduce bills. They call them.
Yeah,
bills.
They introduce them. Yeah. But when it passes, they call it an HR or an HJR, which is a House Joint Resolution, which means the Senate.
That's not true. Oh, I'm going to disagree with you again. I've read a lot of statutory stuff, so I'm going to disagree. You can email me on that, so we don't want to get hung up on that because the listeners aren't going to learn anything from that. But email me, and we can have a conversation about it, okay? Because
this is critical. This is absolutely critical, Ralph, for us to understand, because this is what they did to us. This is what they were wanting to do to us. This is what the lawyers, now this is lawyers with full knowledge, doing it voluntarily, willingly, and knowingly, changed the complexion of our government so that it could not any longer function under the organic system that the framers set up. This is the reason, this is how they did it.
I know that. That's been gone a long time. I've documented each one of the steps, how they had to go into the Judiciary Act of 1879, where it goes into the code. Yep. I've got that by year where they got around, and that's everything coming from the state has to be in law and equity, regardless of what the state, and they don't do that. One form of action.
Right.
I've got all that documented, timelined out.
Right. And so now let me tell you the last thing. The last thing is that Oregon was the last state to come in lawfully under a lawful sitting, lawfully assembled or sitting Congress in February 14th, 1859. That was the last state. The rest of the states afterwards to this very date were not done by a lawful Congress, because a lawful Congress didn't exist at that time. So that's the deal.
You're talking about Oregon in 1859, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I actually have all the Oregon laws of the 1859, because Alaska is on that. And in the actual, I got the codification, a big book somebody gave me for whatever reason. And it shows the two sides of what's going on both sides, in the constitutional side and on the other side in the judiciary. You can see it was right in there.
Yep.
Send me an email, if you have Skype, it probably takes Skype to send it to you. It's an amazing read, because Alaska is after the Oregon 1859.
Yep.
Yep. All righty.
So there's only 33 states that are lawful. So the 33 state flag is the only lawful flag that exists.
Well, I'm going to disagree and say we've got 24, maybe. Okay, that's before the ship. Okay.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
It's happening, ladies and gentlemen. We here at RBN are working with Front Sight Firearms Training Institute to bring our audience the best in combat, tactical, and defensive firearms training. Whether you're a private citizen who is new to firearms, or you have a concealed weapon permit, and want a level of training that surpasses what you've received from your local gun range, Front Sight provides priceless education and skills taught by seasoned law enforcement, military, and private citizen instructors to levels that far exceed law enforcement and military standard. With nearly a million responsible citizens trained from every town, city, and state from across the United States, Front Sight has bolstered the Patriot movement to a whole new level. Contact Dan Sutterfield by phone at 573-762-2356 or 573-465-2356 or shoot him an email at domedan, D-O-M-E-D-A-N, at hotmail.com. This is a limited time opportunity. Don't miss it.
Okay, well, we're back here. We had a good discussion. There's a lot of, I've got so much information on the background because I just read this stuff in that document. Every time I find something, there's got to be a reason. There's always a reason why these guys are doing it. It's totally to overthrow our government. Like beginning on the issue today. If the IRS implements the Affordable Care Act, then it means that the IRS must do something, right? They can't just stick their finger in the air and say, oh, the Affordable Care Act is there. So what do agencies do? And this is where it seems that nobody gets it. What do agencies do? How do I fight an agency? All of them. Without exception. CDC. Any of these nonsense agencies. They do not tell us. They have to do something if they're going to, quote, implement, or as Chrysler says, have the force and effect of law. What do? They have to do something. They can't make statutes. That's a little obvious. Congress is, of course, it's public laws they're making, which don't have application to anybody, really, but that's another whole story since 1936. This has been going on for a long, long time. Just a piece at a time they keep taking away. to pretty soon everybody's believing the nonsense. So what is it that I use against the IRS? They're implementing. They got to be doing something. Well, the Federal Register Act tells us. Now, did the Congress have the authority to do this? No. They did it. Because they weren't in lawful Congress, so we can go into all that. But we got to get current today. What do I do to protect myself today? Because we're not going to go back to a constitutional republic overnight, I guarantee you. Because it's all been overthrown. Without exception. There are no constitutional courts except the Supreme Court. And they print it. They don't hide it if you know where to go look. What do agencies do to, quote, implement or have a force and effect of law? That's the important question. What do they do? The Federal Register Act gets right to it, 1935. 49, Stat 501, Section 5A. It says, anything that has general applicability and or general applicability and general effect shall, I thought it was the legal effect, I may have a typo there, shall, it's got to be in the Federal Register. It's got to be there. It cannot be not missing. It's got to be there. So where, that's how, that's where they do it. That is where they do it. They have to publish in the Federal Register. That is what agencies do. Congress makes these bogus statutes, but to be implemented, the IRS or any agencies shall put in the Federal Register. There's no if, and, or but. They print it. They don't hide it. So that's what they're doing to, quote, supposedly get us hooked on their nonsense. But is that enough to make it force and effect of law? No, it's not. It really isn't. Does not do it. Why? Because just because it's in the Federal Register, there's all types of stuff that they can do in the Federal Register, just like Congress can pass laws of the United States, laws of the United States of America, laws of Congress. They can pass resolutions and on and on and on and on it goes. But we don't know. You don't know. That's one of the questions that's up before the Supreme Court in the Mooney's case right now. How do I know what's going on? They're compiled. The Federal Register publications are compiled under the Federal Register Act of 1935. But how do I know? How can I tell by looking at it? You can't, unless it is. The IRS makes it very easy. I do have a typo. It's general applicability and legal effect. Well, I got to fix that. That's a typo. Anyway, so agencies to implement, make force and effect, or put their nonsense, general applicability and legal effect, have to put everything in the Federal Register. So wouldn't I go to the Federal Register if I'm going to fight the agency? I want to say, what the hell are you doing in there? What is it you do in the Federal Register? General applicability and legal effect. That's nice. Okay. So it's in the Federal Register. I found your stuff in the Federal Register. Okay. So now what? Because this is a whole, this is called the administrative law. This is where the administrative law sits. It's in the Federal Register, and then the act that came along after that, because Congress was trying to get control of the agencies. I got a 1937 done by El Presidente Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He admits the agencies are out of control of the president and they're out of control of Congress. and the courts can barely touch them. So they did the Administrative Procedures Act of 1946. Because what they were trying to do is say, okay, general applicability and legal effect, that's nice. But does it have the force and effect of law? Does everything you do have the force and effect of law? That's a damn good question. How do I know that I should bow down and kiss your tootsies? Real easy when you get through all the nonsense, because they put in the Federal Register Act because it is a whole branch of government called the administrative law. They said everybody's got to take judicial notice of it. That's in Section 7. Everybody's got to take judicial notice. Why would you have to take judicial notice and put that in the act? Because if it's a law, it's automatic. They have to take judicial notice of it. The courts do. Courts of the United States, the constitutional ones. That's a given. It's called the rule of law. There's another word for it. So there are several ways that you can do it that they get down to. You have to take judicial notice of the laws. Otherwise, why do we have a court? Be like, if I'm a Christian and do I have to pay attention to the Ten Commandments? Well, you darn better if you're going to be a Christian. That's a rule of law. It is a commandment, folks. This is simple stuff. General applicability and legal effect. So this is how the Affordable Care Act was put into effect. Implemented. Which still gets back to nonsense. How can something supposedly have to be implemented? Why does the IRS have to do that? Because the class is not citizens of the several states that are domiciled in the Union of States. It is for citizens of the United States that have civil rights. They have no inalienable rights, law of nature, no soul. So if they created a character. And they have no political rights, they have no right of suffrage, and no right of the elective franchise. And Virginia, Ex Parte Virginia, 1879, says nothing changed. All they're supposed to be doing, Congress, is overlooking the states if they're getting out of line and doing something discriminatory. That's it. And they only have the power to legislate for that status of citizens of the United States. But all the, quote, states today are doing it. Because we signed up to give them that power. If we said all we wanted to do today was have landlord and tenant laws, and we signed up, that's the type of law we want, is landlord-tenant laws, that's what we would be ruled under, because we agreed to it. Do they have an office? No. Do they have any constitutional power? No. It's all statutory. It's whatever the legislature or Congress would say. Well, I'm a landlord or I'm a tenant. Of course, in the way it's working today, Congress is the landlord and we are the tenants. We're slaves on the plantation. And we are agreeing to go to the plantation. That's what's even crazier yet. We are agreeing to be enslaved. Every time you say I'm a citizen of the United States, you have no soul. That's why they're so against Christians. These citizens of the United States can't have souls. That's the devil. He says, come on down. We can go sue, but you have no soul. It's amazing. So general applicability and legal effect. So if the IRS is implementing the Affordable Care Act, that's what the Supreme Court said. They don't tell us how. Because they can't. They did. The whole thing would crumble right now. The whole thing, the whole lie would crumble. Yep, it would. So I went into just a couple of these. I searched out. There are a couple of regulations in Title 26. that are there. There's another one, 26 CFR 1.6055. So I went into it. Said, you know, I want to see how, what you're doing here. How are you implementing it? It says here, information reporting for minimum essential coverage. 26 CFR 1.6055. Well, we've got a slight problem here. Because guess what? 553? Where's 553? Because if you are going to make this thing have the force and effect of law, it came along with the Administrative Procedures Act in 1946. And it said it shall be in there. That's all you have to do. You take the CFR 26, the first two letters are the title. CFR is the compilation of all of the federal registers. One, part one is subtitle one. That's subtitle A of the IRS. 6055, that is the code section. Supposedly, they have to identify all those things. And then the thing that you have to find out is, do you have, are you making, what the other caller, are you making resolutions? You're making statements, housekeeping rigs? What are you doing? This one has no 553. Well, damn. The Administrative Procedures Act says thou shalt. Shall. If you're making any regulations of the type that have forced effect of law, this is Chrysler v. Brown, is codified today in 5 U.S.C. 553, and little b in Baker, it shall say in there, you got two ways to do it. One is formal, which says, oh yeah, we're going to do it straight out. You'll never see one of those. I've never seen one. I've looked at thousands of regulations. Federal Register publications. You'll never see one of those. You know why? Because there's no authority to do it. It's a con. I saw the rabbit come out of the damn hat, and I know rabbits come out of the hat because I sat in the audience and I saw the thing. But then I went up to the hat and said, let's do this again. Doesn't work quite that way. So then we have the informal. That's the only other way. The informal. And what's that? This is where Barrett, our supposedly new Supreme Court justice, just glossed over it. Well, we have the informal way and blah, blah, nothing. So do you think that she doesn't know what I know? I don't know where we are in IQ, but she sure the hell got one more of an education than I got. Far as the law, but then of course she may have been into the brainwashing, but she's can't be stupid. I read some of her initial briefs in the Seventh Circuit, and she's not a stupid person. You can't miss the jug holes unless you know there's a jug hole going down the road. So why do we know all these agencies are our enemies? Every one of them. Because there's only two ways they can touch you or me. A formal rulemaking, have the force and effect of law, Chrysler v. Brown, or an informal. That's it. And if they don't have either one of that, if they don't mention 553, it's garbage. They're weeing in the wind. Who cares? And the Federal Register Act says so. As far as if they don't have it in the Federal Register, but the APA says if it ain't one or the other, you're done. Did they teach you that in college? Did they teach you that in high school? I missed that section. But the good part is, how do we know they're an enemy? When I say that, how can I prove they are the enemy? I got to be able to prove this stuff. Well, the administrative, the Senate report in 1946, and there's court cases once I knew what I was, found out what I was looking for, they tell us what they're doing. Do you have an access? Have you seen the Senate report of 1946? I'll bet you haven't. Do they want to publish it out here? No. I wouldn't either if I was them. You've got to be kidding. Why would I do that? I want stupid people out here. I want people with no education of what's really going on. I want them to listen to my hype, my nonsense, and use that. You literally cannot make this stuff up because it's all hidden, and without the Federal Register Act or without Westlaw, you're not going to find out what's going on. That's just the way it is. You're not going to find out what is going on because you don't have access to it. And we're on a need to know, and we really, really, really don't need to know. Because if we actually figured out what was going on with some understanding, there would be some people probably going to jail or something going on tomorrow. Or I'm looking for this Senate report. And this is how you can determine every agency without exception is an enemy, our enemy. And they're using it against us. And we don't even know why. Because you've never seen it, never even heard of it. I can't find the... there's the Senate report. That's what I'm looking for right there. How do we know this? Because here's the game. I have general applicability and legal effect. Has to be. That's what they do to implement, force, and effect anything. That's their action. They have to take a positive action. That's a guaranteed. Simple. You can't implement, you can't do nothing unless you do something that somebody can see. And they put it in the Federal Register. It's just that damn simple. And everybody's got to take judicial notice of it. And it says, if it ain't there, have a nice life. Then we have to go to step two. The Administrative Procedures Act, which it says the only purpose was to make substantive regs. The people need to know how to find out if the thing has force and effect of law. But they made it complicated, of course, because they have the formal and they have the informal. The formal can't exist because they have no authority. The informal, they fool us. And how do we know they're an enemy? Number one, they won't say 553, therefore it's garbage. But if they do, here's what they love to say. This rule is impractical, unnecessary, and contrary to the public interest. How do I know when I see that what to do? 10 court cases, by the way, once I knew what to search on. But it's in this, Minister, this is the how-to book that Congress published in 1946. And it says you have to have an emergency and you can't use this as an escape clause. You have to have a true and supportable finding of necessity or emergency must be made and published. You'll never see one. There's no emergency. We're just saying it, but there's no emergency. But how do I know they're an enemy? Well, they print it. Impractical means a situation in which the due and required execution of an agency functions would be unavoidably prevented by its undertaking public rulemaking. Oh, by golly, if we do that public rulemaking, you could stop us doing this nonsense. Does that sound like somebody you want in charge to implement the Affordable Care Act? It says right here, it would be unavoidably prevented by its undertaking public rulemaking. They're the enemy. Because we could stop this nonsense. Because it's nonsense. It's unlawful, illegal, unconstitutional. That's our impractical. Unnecessary says, oh, you know, it's a different issue. We're not going to be. I have an application to be. And then we have public interest. that requires the public rulemaking procedure shall not prevent an agency from operating. And that, on the other hand, lack of public interest in making it warrants the agency to dispense with public procedure. But here's the key: shall not prevent an agency from operating. So if the public, if the informal, it's called the predicate. You hear that word a lot. That's the foundation. This has to happen. The predicate of informal rulemaking. And when they use impractical, unnecessary, and contrary to the public interest, the predicate. The reason why they're doing that is so that it would be unavoidably prevented by undertaking a public rulemaking procedure. Is that not tell you why agencies are our enemy? Imagine. Well, if we did it the way Congress said, you could stop us from doing what we're doing. That's what's going on. I challenge anybody listening if you really thoroughly understood this, because it's taken me a long time. I don't know about you. Maybe you're better than I am at it. And now what we have, not only can we prove that they are the enemy by their rulemaking nonsense, they are the enemy. Imagine if Congress could be stopped from passing bills. And we have the authority, but we don't use it because we don't know. Congress should be stopped from passing bills. Of course, that's why they're trying to get rid of all the different the things that for minorities and all this other stuff to stop or get up and talk and stop this nonsense. So what do I do? How do I fight the IRS? That's the question. I know what they got to do now. Well, they print it. I put out a list of 706 hits of 301 rigs. 26 is the title. U.S. or CFRs is the compilation of the federal registers. 301 is under 5 U.S.C. 301. That is housekeeping rigs. Supreme Court said if it's a 301 rig, it's housekeeping. It's got nothing to do with you or me. It's strictly internal, period. And then if it has the code section next. 6211 and 6212, definition and notice of deficiency for tax court, is a 301 reg. So why the hell do we have a tax court? Because it applies to nobody. And when you go to tax court, they use statutes. Wait a minute. Oh, wait a minute here. If you're implementing something in the administrative world, you shall use regulations. Why doesn't anybody go there? They bring them up occasionally, and everybody says, oh, well, I don't know, 301 reg, and yeah, it's law, and nobody does anything about it. It's in all kinds of sorts of cases, but the tax court doesn't bring that up. They use codes. You can't beat them with codes because they have no authority to use codes to begin with, and if they use the regulations, which is what they are mandated to use, they'd lose. Tax court shouldn't even be there. It's a con. Now you take your notices of federal tax lien in your county. Go look at the first two. The first of, there's three code sections. I don't have them up right now. Maybe I'll get them up here during the break. The first and this third one are what? 301 rigs. They have no authority to file a notice of federal tax lien in your county. It's a 301 rig. The filing. Was it 6012, I think it is, or something, to file out in Form 1040. That's a 301 rig. The assessment, 6203, that's a 301 rig. 6331, notice, levy, lien, to take your stuff, that's a 301 rig. A whole laundry list of them. Why the hell is nobody using this? I scratch my head. I didn't know how to use it. I'll guarantee you. I was chasing statutory law until I read the Federal Register and I said, wait a minute. if they're mandated to put it in the Federal Register, why wouldn't I use what's in the Federal Register to see if it has, if it touches me? It's a simple issue. I don't know why the heck it took me so long to get there from here. How I got there is I was helping a guy down in Florida, and I made the tax court take judicial notice of the code and stuff, and they says, no, we can't take judicial notice. Well, if you don't have judicial notice, you have no rule of law. You don't have no standard of review. What are you using to make sure something's going on? I said, I'm chasing the wrong pony. I'm on a merry-go-round, and I got to get off of that merry-go-round because somebody's lying to me. That's when I started going back to every regulation other than the 1939 code. I came back to the Public Salary Act. It says the states and the federal got contracts because they can't lawfully tax each other. Then I come to the Buck Act, says we're deemed to be in a federal area. Deemed? I don't know. Deemed to be any damn where. The Buck Act.
It's happening, ladies and gentlemen. We here at RBN are working with Front Sight Firearms Training Institute to bring our audience the best in combat, tactical, and defensive firearms training. Whether you're a private citizen who is new to firearms, or you have a concealed weapon permit, and want a level of training that surpasses what you've received from your local gun range, Front Sight provides priceless education and skills taught by seasoned law enforcement, military, and private citizen instructors to levels that far exceed law enforcement and military standard. With nearly a million responsible citizens trained from every town, city, and state from across the United States, Front Sight has bolstered the Patriot movement to a whole new level. Contact Dan Sutterfield by phone at 573-762-2356 or 573-465-2356 or shoot him an email at domedan, D-O-M-E-D-A-N, at hotmail.com. This is a limited time opportunity. Don't miss it.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Easeoff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Okay. The other thing that's scary, they cited a publication which is irrelevant. But the other part that's really scary, the dissenting opinions, Alito and Gorsuch, it says, No one can fail to be impressed by the lengths to which the court is willing to defend the Affordable Care Act against all threats. A penalty is a tax. A penalty is a tax. And the one that's really bad, the United States is a state. United States is a state. And they cited a case. So I went back and looked at this case. And it's amazing how they start off. They said, after all, this is the case they recited. Defend state to mean each of the 50 states and the District of Columbia. The definition does not include the federal government. With the view of the places, the meaning of the phrase established by the state is not so clear. And they go on to say the Affordable Care Act resides in a state that establishes the exchange. So it's not clear. Somehow they see they define state, 50 states and the District of Columbia, and then they take that and put it into this other recent case and say that a state means the United States. We have 50 of the several states. And I tell you damn well, United States is not one of them. The Constitution says government of the United States. There are two places it shows up. It is comprised of the several states. But they use a state. A state, not several states. See, this is these dang lawyers. And then they go on to say in the dissenting opinion, which is right on, the lengths that they will go to do this. They just make this stuff up. And why is that bad? Because they say fans of judicial inventiveness will applaud once again. So they say here, so a tax that does not tax is allowed to stand. So why is that important? Because in the National Voter Registration Act, they defined a state as the state of the United States and the District of Columbia. Same nonsense. It's only for federal offices. There are no elections for any public officers or any of the several states. That's why there's no governor. That's a con. And I can tell you unequivocally, Congress has no authority. A state of the United States means it's a municipal entity under the United States, like the District of Columbia. They put an and in there. And if they'll rule in this Administrative Procedures Act to say United States is a state and the penalty is a tax, what the heck do we have to rely on the Supreme Court? They know better. I guarantee you. And they did it to keep the Affordable Care Act with old John Roberts and all of his other, and Barrett and them went along with it. Why? You don't got to be rocket scientist to figure that out. Congress cannot legislate and the federal 50 of the several states in the same act with the District of Columbia because they are two different jurisdictions. One, they have plenary power in D.C. In the several states, they have a very limited under Article 1. But if you are a citizen of the United States that exists in D.C. and outside D.C., in D.C., you're a qualified elector. Outside, we sign up because we just really don't want constitutional law. I'd rather be a slave and have Pelosi and all those idiots telling me what to do. We'll see you next Sunday. What's up for the Democrats in the federal rallies and get Trump back in? And the track.
Good night.
Good night.
Sweetheart. Sweetheart. Good night.
Good night, sweetheart.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Kosher-certified app can make a huge difference for your future. This